Welcome to the Futile Podcast. I want to talk a little about a little Fincher. Sure. A little aging backwards. Mm-hmm. Time flows backwards. If you're Casey Jones in Nolan's, then you might just build yourself a clock that ticks backwards because you're depressed that your son got killed in WW1 mm-hmm. in the Great War.
Yep.
And that whole part didn't need to be in the movie at all. It would have made it a little more digestible.
I don't know about that, because if you'll notice...
At the very end, they have the water and the clock, yeah.
No, that doesn't matter. What matters is...
Well, that was the only reason they...
That was the one thing they put in there to indicate... Because did you get any point where they hinted at the fact that he was born at the same time that clock was finished?
A little bit, but not really. No, I didn't, actually. I didn't feel that was communicated.
So they were very loose about it, but... I think that's the only reason they had that there is to try to give any sort of reason at all why, you know, it's kind of a pseudo magical thing, but
yeah,
still,
it's a fable.
Still, it's a reason.
It's
you know?
A fable, yeah. Yeah. Of course. The whole film is that way.
And watching that opening World War One scene backwards, plus the parts of the ocean with the U-boat firing at them and stuff,
yeah.
made me think that guy would make one hell of a war film. He would make a fantastic
Fincher? Oh, yeah.
war film.
He I know. I thought there was more of that in the trailer. They show the World War One footage, and you think I thought he was actually going to be in World War One, right. and the World War II stuff was cool. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I guess we can just bite right into this. Benjamin Button, Curious Case, based on a short story by F. Scott Fitzgerald about a New Orleans child who is born old and ages backwards. Mm-hmm. He starts as a baby-sized old person with glaucoma and severe arthritis and
osteoporosis
and everything, and then as he gets older he gets more fit and younger, and that's essentially what's going on. In breaking from the short story, the parents are kind of removed from this so that they can make it more of a typical generic New Orleans type story, and they have a bunch of family of people that take care of him like as an orphan instead, and that's the first.
I don't think that was the reason why they.
That's
did
the
it.
First hour of the movie is just him pretty much being an old guy, mm-hmm. being very old, a little kid, kind of seeing, at an old folks' home, I guess, seeing how age treats people. He fits in with them visually, but he doesn't fit in with them like psychologically. And they don't really kind of do a lot with that, to be honest. I never really got the sense...
I don't think that they were trying to.
I never really got the sense that they played on the side of him being like a little kid, because he always seemed to be pretty, mature. Even, like, when he's seven, you know? Mm-hmm. And then he's at the church, and he's all old and hobbly. He's like, how old are you? He's like, seven, but I look older, you know? And it's like, is that a joke? Like, a kid that's seven...
I think he'd been coached to say that.
Yeah, it's possible.
His mom probably told him to tell people that because they wouldn't understand.
Yeah, that's true. And so, I mean, I don't know. I think I felt like the first hour of the movie could have been condensed down. That's just a critique from me, because the real excitement and the real, like first plot point isn't until about an hour when he decides to get on the tugboat and go off and see the world. You know, and I for some reason, I really thought that was going to happen sooner in the movie. I thought it was more of a travel picture. It was more about the adventures he got in.
Do you want to go through the whole plot here? Because it sounds like you want to jump right into some stuff you think's problematic here, which I can refute.
No, I got through the problematic stuff.
You didn't, though, because you were wrong about it.
Okay, well, then let's do that.
All right. So the reason why they have him away from the family is to... And you'll notice this happens with every single character he comes in contact with, including the love of his life, played by boring old Cate Blanchett, is that they were showing, when it comes down to it, the utter loneliness of life and how every single person is going through it alone, and that every single person you meet with, all you're sharing with them is individual moments, and it's not like you're in this life together. Mm-hmm. And the way to show that whole story is by having someone for whom it's obvious, because he cannot relate to anyone. It's impossible for him to relate to anyone. All his experiences are backwards because he has to do everything that people do older in life, younger in life, because he looks older, and it all happens
kind of.
The stuff about him having, you know, the black parents and stuff, I don't think that had anything to do with it, except for the fact that they wanted to put him in something lower class to start with, because then he... You can't have someone living a hard life. If somebody's born to a rich family...
Yeah. Then it's like...
Then it doesn't matter. Your experience is already skewed. You're not living a normal life, you know? So the normal life, on average, is poorer
than
a rich.
That said, he didn't have, like, a super downtrodden life at that
old folks' home. I mean, he's cared for, you know?
He was cared for, and he helped. I think I got the rationale of him being in the old folks. I totally understand that. I just felt like it was too long.
They did spend a long time on that. I think because...
And it's possible that...
I think because the most interesting... instead of it being more interesting to have him look like a 20-year-old Brad Pitt at the age of 60...
Yeah.
It's more interesting to have him look like a 60-year-old Brad Pitt at the age of 20. That's why I think they spent so long on that earlier stuff.
But the thing is, they had him like in the 80-year-old for like 40 minutes. As a little kid. Right. And that was what I thought they could have...
slowly, because they want to show... Really, they're just kind of hammering home with any sort of fable thing. There's not necessarily a moral, but there's always an overriding theme that you're constantly touching on, because the theme is the important thing. You want to bash people over the head with the theme. And the theme is you're alone in life, but the moments, the brief, fleeting moments you share with those people that you love are what makes your life important.
Yes.
Or what, you know, yada yada, bullcrap, Hallmark stuff.
That's nothing lasts forever.
Which is not a problem. You know, there has to be movies that say stuff like that so that we can enjoy the movies that don't say stuff like that.
I suppose so. Well, there's an inherent truth in that.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's just one of those things. And I'm not saying anything's wrong with it. Just to get this out of the way overall, I greatly enjoyed this movie, mostly because of the visual, not just visuals, but the visual control Fincher has. The guy is an absolute master of making the movie look exactly like he wants, and everything on screen looking,
I'd say I agree with you, but I never got blown away by too much visually, because it just kind of was all just serving the story, you know what I mean? As opposed to something like Seven, where so much of that visual is like relevant to the story, you know, like the creepiness and the darkness.
But in a good movie, you want the visual serving the story. There's no real
intrinsic stylism in this film. It's just serving the story. I mean, and it's like a hotel lobby. It looks really nice. It looks really pristine. It's, you know, you're right. There's a mastery of like filmmaking there light it and everything. And you know what? I don't see it as a fault in this film. In this kind of film, it shouldn't be that way. Mm-hmm. But, you know...
I just think that he did a fantastic job of... If you notice, his scenes where he's constantly meeting with Tilda Swinton.
Yeah, that the hotel lobby
places,
stuff, yeah.
Every single place he's put into where he spends time, except for a few moments like in the brothel and stuff like that, is him alone with someone else. Or seeming alone, despite there being other people there.
Oh, absolutely.
So, Fincher absolutely made... it clear through just the visuals. You didn't need people saying anything about it. You know, the theme was being shown you. It wasn't being told
you. It was the mise-en-scène, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, he really is becoming utterly adept at that. Here was my problem with the film. And it doesn't make it not a good film for me, but it is a gaping hole in the center of it.
Okay.
Was his character is Forrest Gump. It's written by Eric Roth, who wrote Forrest Gump. His character seems retarded. The whole movie, he seems retarded.
Just think he's like more straightforward about stuff.
He doesn't get bent out of shape about things. No, but that's not the problem. The problem is he doesn't ever make anything happen. Forrest Gump was interesting because it was a retarded person going through life. Fantastic things were happening around him, and he was responding.
It was a joke.
It wasn't just funny. He was responding very simply to things that were happening. Every single big event that had happened in the world,
Occam's razor, and it was usually the right response. Exactly. Was what he just did.
And people were wowed by his simplicity and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And he became this great person, yada yada. But he wasn't great to him. He was just doing what he was supposed to do. This was someone who seemed like that, but was supposed to be a reasonably intelligent, normal person. Mm-hmm. But the problem wasn't just... I had an issue with the character writing and that he didn't talk much, so like that. The problem, the main problem, is that he doesn't make anything happen. I don't think that's our door.
Okay.
He's not causing any action. Things are happening to him, and he's barely even reacting.
I don't know. All he is,
he's an observer. All he is an observer in this whole thing.
Well, but that fits with the loneliness thing. I think that's to a degree you're right, but I gotta disagree because he chooses to leave the orphanage, the old folks' home, and go on the tugboat. He chooses to get the job where the guy says, "Hey, I want to work,"
but for no reason. And it's always like the thing in the beginning of Talladega Nights. It's not like he went out and got his job. Something happened, and
He happened to be in the right place.
And somebody says, who wants to drive this car? And he's like, oh, I guess I'll do it.
He chose to do it, though.
I know, but it's...
How many times has someone said something to you and you're like, no?
But the thing is, it's not an active protagonist. It's a very, very, very passive protagonist.
To a degree, I guess you're right. And he kind of... World War II happens, and it's never a question to him that he's going to be on the boat.
Yeah, right.
He chooses to go visit Cate Blanchett in New York.
That's not the point, though. Okay. The thing is, like, there's not any sort of goal or motivation that he has that causes him to act toward things.
Mm-hmm.
He just makes decisions when they come to him.
He's a
passive observer. And that's not necessarily a problem. But in this type of thing, it left a hole in the middle. Like, there was no point for this guy's story to be told beside the fact that he
aged backwards,
You understand what I'm saying?
That's
what I felt.
I get that, and I think that, exacerbating it. In that sense, it was much more of a story thematic movie and not so much of a character.
And making that even worse, and I feel this is even more important than just a gaping hole. So exacerbating, making worse that problem... if you even want to call it a problem of the hole in the middle from that character standpoint, is the fact that you have Brad Pitt playing him. And I have a problem with Brad Pitt because...
His characters never seem to be... They're always too cool to want anything, right?
And that's because he doesn't have any sort of charisma like a Ewan McGregor or Guy Pearce or somebody who... Like, those are people who wear their goal or their motivation or their passion on their face. They look like they're eager for something.
Mm-hmm.
Brad Pitt never has ever come off like that, except for in a few things like in Fight Club and stuff like that, where he seems like that's like not him in a lead role. That's really a supporting role, even though he's in it just as much as
his goal is still pretty abstract in that. So
it is, but he's a figment of a guy's imagination. Yeah. He's not a person. You know what I mean? He's the absolute perfect choice for the aesthetics of the film, because you got this person turning younger to a more and more beautiful person, and the most beautiful man on earth is Brad Pitt, right? Or was at some point. So you have to do it, and his skin and everything looks so golden and tan and perfect, and his hair, and there's almost no other choice you could pick for the thing, you know? Okay. For the aesthetics, it worked. And he really, I thought, was marvelous in the scenes where he looks very old, because... He did some really weird stuff with his face, and it was, like, endearing with the old character. Like, his looks of confusion and happiness and stuff like that were great in this old guy's face. And then, like, you know, Tom Cruise or somebody couldn't have pulled that off.
Yeah.
But at the same time, Tom Cruise is nothing but
charisma.
Like, you know, and that's his downfall, because all he is charisma, and he's no subtlety or anything like that. Brad Pitt is all subtlety and no charisma. Like, there's no in-between for him or Tom Cruise.
He's perpetually too cool to ever have any desire.
You know, can you imagine Harrison Ford in his 30s playing this role, you know, or 40s or something like that? It would have been a vastly different movie.
The character
would have been way better. It wouldn't have looked the same, obviously. No, but, no. See, and I think those two...
You could have gotten Stanley Kubrick to make it. Stanley Kubrick and Harrison Ford have done this movie.
Would have went crazy.
It would have been a four-hour-long movie, but it would have been awesome, right?
So anyway,
the parts you didn't sleep through.
Yeah, those were my main issues with the film.
Okay, yeah, I think I have to agree with you about that, because I've wondered that about Pitt, and why I kind of just don't care about any of the characters he ever plays, really, you know. And I think you're right. There is that sense that, like, more often than not, he just doesn't play characters that have, like, a real motivation. I guess I don't. I mean, in this, you're right. The gimmick is that he ages backwards, and that he's living a life in kind of an exciting time period. And this is where I'm sort of disappointed with the film, and I would agree with you there. I went into it expecting it to be, and I'd heard the stuff about Forrest Gump and stuff, so I thought, well, okay, maybe there's, like, a lot of different stories that happen to him. You know, he gets into a lot of adventures out in the world. He goes out as an old man, and people think he's old, but he's actually young. So, like, mentally, he's not as prepared as people might think. And that could be an interesting collection of things as stuff happens to him in the world. And so my disappointment in the film is that, first of all, it takes him an hour before he goes out into the world. And then the first thing he does is sit in a hotel room and cheat, you know, and have an affair, you know, commit adultery with this right. Tilda Swinton woman, who's kind of uninteresting. I kind of get what they're doing there, but... And so that's in, you know, a half an hour. And then the next thing is some World War II stuff, and that's kind of cool, but it's real brief.
Right.
And then it's kind of like back to New Orleans.
And the tone of the characters in each segment changes. The Tilda Swinton character is a serious real-life character who is also alone in the world, going the opposite direction. They meet in the middle, just like it is with everyone.
Mm-hmm.
The people on the boat, though, are jokey caricatures.
Yeah.
And he has his interactions with those. That's where he learns, you know, learns how to screw and all that stuff, yeah, whatever else, you know,
drinking,
learns to drink.
Drinking and whoring.
Yeah. His relationship with his dad is creepy and weird and of course just sad, like everything, like, you know,
mm-hmm,
everyone in the film dies off eventually, like
that's
half
sort of,
the people
that's
in
the
film
point.
Have some sort of terminal illness, which of course which was the point, and it all ends like that, but it just, you know, the character consistency is the problem and not anything with the actual story, I felt like.
Well, I just felt like there wasn't as much to the story as I would have liked. I thought,
right,
you got a 3.5 hour long movie about a guy that ages backwards in a given time period. Okay, yeah, 246. In a time period that could have a lot of very interesting things. Mm-hmm. At the very least, you got World War
II.
They
arbitrarily picked that time period, too, because they Fitzgerald didn't put it that time. I think he put it earlier.
When the guy dies, it's not in the future?
Something like that, yeah. No, he put it farther back than it was started in, like, the early, late 1800s.
I know, so that way the guy that ages backwards wouldn't be dead
right
in the future.
Right.
You know what I mean?
So, anyway...
Because I thought that. I'm like, the Fitzgerald story, was he writing in the 60s?
The New Orleans setting,
mm-hmm,
well, it seemed like it was arbitrary to me because, first of all, it's a city with a strong visual aesthetic, so we
yeah
probably figured for that. But it also seemed like they did for the bookends with Katrina, which had nothing to do with anything.
Yeah.
Did that bother you? Except for the fact that we know Katrina wipes out this city that he
yeah
lived in.
It's
like,
another,
it's like it's
another
erasing,
bit of, another bit
it's
of mortality.
It's erasing his history, you
yeah
know? Like, all that's left now
that's,
is, you know, that sort of thing. So I understand that, but
and
it also
it does
kind of like
it does create a little bit of tension with the story between...
yeah, it
because
does.
It's like, you know, if they don't get the fuck out of there,
yeah,
that's
they're
bad
screwed,
news.
So,
yeah.
Yeah, so you're right, and that keeps it going. So who knows? Maybe it was better than
I did,
it was to...
Well, to a degree, I had, you know, there's potential issue there, but I just really wanted there to be more adventure in this movie. I mean, I felt like, why not? And what, I mean, here's the thing. I got the point about the loneliness and the sadness, and honestly, I felt really moved when he finally did connect with the love of his life.
Oh, yeah,
in
yeah
the on the right terms.
Right.
I mean, he had the discipline to kind of put her off earlier,
right,
when she advanced
when
it.
When she comes on him, and then he...
And then he goes
he
looking for
reciprocate
her. I love
and
that.
She's not, and she's not having it at that,
that
point.
That felt so real, because
yeah
that's like that would happen to me, you know? And I felt like that's the way that
it takes some time
goes
for her to realize that she had to make all her mistakes first, and he kind of
yeah
hasn't had to make his mistakes first, because he's, you know, because he's aging backwards.
And so then they do kind of meet at the middle, and that whole time period, like, I don't know, to me it felt like very sincere. Like, there was a real, real like, quintessential happiness
of two
people.
That's the only time that his character seemed like a real person to me. Because
yeah
he seemed like... You don't ever hear their conversations, but you see the scenes where they're, like... They're just messing around in the apartment.
Yeah, and painting the house.
Yeah,
and
they're having fun, and it seems like they're having real conversations. And I wish I could have heard him talking.
Yeah.
Because then I would know that he was a real person. Because then after that, we just get some montage shots of him cruising around the country on a motorcycle, and how he left, and then he comes back, and
yeah,
you know, so it's like we never really get to know his character. We don't get to know
in that
his
one
person
brief like 10-year period
yeah
where he was happy and had a wife
yeah
and had a kid for a while,
yeah,
and you know, they had a regular job and had friends, and they had a first year birthday party for the little girl,
right,
and all that stuff. And then, yeah, and then he leaves and goes off and gets into a bunch more adventures, but they don't bother to show. They show
yeah
us clips of that, and rather than making the movie more of that, I mean, I guess I just felt like thematically I understood what it was trying to do, but if it had cut less out here and been, I don't know, I would have wanted...
Could have cut more out of the beginning, put some more on the back end.
With the adventures,
yeah,
and I honestly felt, because, I don't know, I felt like really weird about him leaving when he did, because it seemed like he had another good 10 years in
it. Oh, heck yeah. They,
and
they
and
looked
like,
very similar still. They weren't, yeah.
Yeah, and then, I mean, and then the ending,
well,
I had problems with the ending, with him coming back. Like, there was no good motivation for that, and then they sleep together again, and it's like he's like 14 or something.
Yeah,
and,
right.
I mean, I don't care about that. I understand what's going on there, but I just don't understand why that happened.
Well,
why that scene's there.
I can say
why he comes
why
back
he left
just to do
did with the daughter was because he didn't want her to remember
him. To remember him,
yeah.
That makes some sense, but then coming back at all made no
right
sense, and then them...
It's a very sad movie, and it makes you
yeah
think. It really does make you think a lot. It was successful in all those things. It just felt a little empty to me.
It did, and it, I mean, that kind of might have been kind of the point,
yeah,
because, I mean, after that weird scene where he comes back and he's really young, and then they sleep together, which I had problems with on a lot of levels. If he'd just come back and seen her for, you know, just because you could tell he just wanted to see her one last time before his memory went or whatever, it would have been okay. But he kind of tells her where he's at, And then, you know, so she's going to show up and they're going to bang one last time. That just felt very sinister or something. But I didn't like that. You know, after meeting her husband and everything else. I don't know. I'm very moralistic, as you can tell, right? Yeah. It's hard for me on the to be on the side of any character if he chooses to commit adultery.
But you know that, I mean, in Hollywood,
that's a big thing. They don't care.
Love and passion overall.
Yes, of course.
Not just love, but passion. Or, if it's somebody you had passion for, that's more important than whether or not the person is loyal and
exactly. Like that, you know? All that, that just, you know, that person doesn't know any better. We're good, right? But then, here's where I had another question.
It's like at the end of Castaway. She got remarried, right? This guy's a nice dude.
Yeah.
He comes back, and she runs outside screaming after him in a rainstorm. They make out and stuff like that in the rain, and then, you know, then she's like, wait, I can't do it, you know, stuff like that. But the whole time, the guy is still getting, you know, cuckolded in his house, basically. He's, you know, sitting up there probably listening.
Yeah, but it didn't go on too far.
It didn't go on too far, but it's the same thing where, like, you know.
And the circumstances are a little different. I mean, that's like I don't know. I've never really been in love, but I mean, if that is the way, if you lose someone like that in that very indefinite sense, like, yeah, they're probably dead, but it's probably dead, then it's, you're probably going to move on, but you're probably going to move on.
Castaway wasn't a good example. I was just picking that one part of it.
But the point is, I didn't like it. In Button, it was bad. I didn't like it. And then at the end, I mean, I honestly wondered, like, is this just going to be like a fades away kind of thing? But they didn't. They went the creepy route, and honest
have
to God,
baby die?
That scared the shit out of me.
Baby closed its eyes.
With the eyes and everything. That, not even that, but just the idea. I've always had a weird fear about not so much mortality, but the way you go. Just the whole the slipping into dementia and just completely losing it. Like that. There's going to be a period, an inevitable period, and everyone. Because I know. I mean, I'm the kind of personality. I'm going to die. Alone. I'm not going to have family. I'm not going to have people that care about me. It's going to be terrible for me. If not, like, holding a shotgun, like, keeping the bad guys away while the kids escape and post-create... No, it'll be the Chavez, Putin, Axis of Evil, take over America thing.
So you think Red Dawn is going to happen to you then?
Pretty much. I think I'm going to be, like, the Michael Caine in Children of Men, pretty much. I'm just going to hold off the bad guys so the good guys can get away and then I get killed.
So... It as a rumination on,
but yeah,
death,
but that whole
dying,
death thing.
The whole movie is about dying. The base of the whole point
it's
is
about
that you start
solitude within life. Yeah,
you start dying the instant you're born. So have some good moments and shit like that. That's always
point.
Sad. People, I mean, the only way to be happy in life, you know, from a very
is to
secular
live
standpoint,
in the moment and not live in the moment of death.
No, is to completely ignorant. You completely ignore death.
Well,
you don't worry about it until it happens.
You just don't think about
it. That's the only thing, that's the only possible thing you can do. Because if you live life like the movie Benjamin Button would have you think, then you have to be constantly reminded of death, and that makes the living moments that much more powerful. As a hypochondriac, I can tell you for me, that is not possible.
That doesn't help
you. I would be comatose. I would be completely catatonic because of fear.
You'd be hiding in an oven somewhere.
I would be mortified. I would be hiding in a refrigerator waiting for a nuke to blast me somewhere else than where I am.
Into safety, into immortality world.
As rumination on death and all that stuff, it's powerful.
Yeah, and
as a story about an adventuring guy who ages backwards, it's
disappointing.
Very on the weak side.
Yes, I do.
Forrest Gump is probably a better movie. Forrest Gump gets a lot of backlash
lot
these days
fun,
because it's very cutesy and quirky
schmaltzy.
But it is a much more fun movie. Where it's excusable that the character is the way he is. Plus, Tom Hanks is a phenomenal actor.
Yeah.
Brad Pitt is a handsome guy. That's their difference.
Yeah, I mean, I just can't get over it. I mean, I agree with you. The sadness of the part when they're happy is, like, almost the most intense.
It is. That's the most sad part.
That moment in the dance studio when they see that they just sort of met each other in the middle, and it's like, really, that does give you this sense of, like, there's like a 3-year period there where everything's perfect.
It's heartbreaking.
And then it disappears. And that bothered me. I'm sort of sitting there watching it alone and whatnot.
It's probably not something I'm going to watch again. Unless years down the road I'm like, oh, I want to see this again, you know? Like,
I don't think I would either. I mean, you know, I like certain scenes, so it's a TV thing. If I see it on TV and, you know, I might want to watch a section of it, you know, if it's widescreen.
I don't really like watching Forrest Gump either, so.
Yeah. But just the ending was just the, honest to God, just the idea. Plus, I felt like he got shortchanged. honestly, because he had to be baby-sized but old. Mm-hmm. And then as he aged backwards, he didn't get baby-looking but still, like,
so big,
tall,
which would be really creepy.
Exactly. That's why I wondered how they were gonna. I thought they just wouldn't do that. You know what I mean? I thought they just wouldn't bother showing it. They wouldn't.
I liked the part where she walks in and he's a kid and he accuses them of trying to poison him. Uh-huh. That was pretty good because that was just like playing on the stereotypical
or the part where the part where he spits on Charlie and Charlie tells him he's gonna crush him into a jelly.
Yeah, dude, that kid looked exactly like
it. It was that kid.
No way.
That was the same actor. No, I remember because I thought, I'm like, is that the kid that always just plays a prick on TV? And I'm like, it is that kid that just plays a prick kid on TV.
They were
TV.
Like, who can we hire who's like a light brown-haired kid who could swear on film? Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, that kid from It's Always Sunny.
Yeah, playing the piano. Yeah, that was weird.
I will smash you into a jelly.
Crush you into a jelly. Yeah, I'd have to give it a...
Smash your face in
probably the because, like, it did evoke emotion. Mm-hmm. I would have to give it... I think I'll just give it a B.
It's a B for me.
But like you said, it was a weak story. Yeah. And it felt a little too long. And... Because it was. And that's that. Mm-hmm. Anything else?
Oh.
Other materials? Seth wants to start doing pitches again. We should pitch a Benjamin Button... Where he ages.
You know, I thought years ago, I thought of an, I didn't know this idea even existed, and I was like, I thought I was a genius. I was like, what about a thing where a guy, I was actually a sci-fi though, mm-hmm. and it was where in the future, doctors' efforts or pharmacological people's efforts to make some sort of anti-aging thing mm-hmm. Had some sort of effect on the whole human race, and that everyone started getting, was born old and aged backwards. And that was my brilliant idea when I was like 11 or 12 or something like that. And then I found out like 3 years later that there was a short story and they were making a movie of it. Because Luke always, if I ever told Luke an idea, he was like, oh yeah, they're making that. Like, no matter what it was. And
at least it kept you honest, huh?
Well, yeah, and I didn't feel that bad for me because it always happened with Luke. Luke actually started writing scripts so many times for movies, and then like 6 months later, they would announce that they were making that movie. Like, I swear, he came up with like Point Break and stuff like that. I swear, like any like there were so many ideas, like horror movies and like sci-fi and stuff like that. He totally came up with the idea.
What about this one? Science fiction. I may have already talked about this on the podcast. The one about where it's a dystopian science fiction film, where kind of a Gattaca thing. The way reproduction works is through cloning, and you just there's a like a balancing act, and right. there's the right number of people in the world, and basically the children of the individual is a reproduction of that individual. Mm-hmm. So you can get into this whole idea
of
like
Boba Fett's
improved cloning. Well, if each clone was a different person, that doesn't make any sense, but basically it's like I live my life, you live your life.
So the everyone lives their life, filmed with the same people.
And but you're raising yourself,
right?
And like your dad was you, and or a clone of you, so such that basically, I think the idea I came up with it when I was in like a class studying Aristotle. I don't mm-hmm. know what was in the Aristotle thing, had an unmoved mover or something, you know, shadows on the wall, that kind of crap. Aristotelian forms,
right?
Or Platonic forms,
Platonic,
and. Just this idea that, like, if you make a copy of something, it can improve itself because, like, who knows you better than you? So if you were going to raise another version of you, what things would you maybe know to teach your kid to not... teach yourself to not do?
Yeah,
you know, but of course, I mean, there would be...
The person is still going to, as all children do with their parents, not believe them until the thing they tell them not to do goes wrong.
Right.
And they're like, I should have listened to you. That's mm-hmm. Every single person does that.
Exactly. And it's I don't know, it's just an idea I came up with. Anyway, you
it's
haven't
good.
Said
I like that. No, I like that.
Haven't said that. Well, now it's posted on a podcast. I mailed this podcast to myself.
Right. Copyright.
So, copyright.
Patent pending. Let's say that was your pitch.
That was my
good.
Pitch.
I like that.
It's called Escape from Clonus Island. We'll be right back.
He was like, tell me what you think about this. We were just sitting there. Because normally he says that, and it's about, like, what if your eyes had a mouth? In this case, it was an actual good pitch for a thing. And I loved it. I loved the idea of Stern and Pesci recruiting violent mercenaries.
I just love the idea of old Kevin, like, breaking necks.
Yeah, because he was a Navy SEAL.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, he's because of all the trauma and stuff as a kid.
Uh-huh. And the trauma for Stern and Pesci, I love that.
Yeah, isn't that great? It would be awesome.
If they can get killed with, like, a fire hose.
Oh, man.
That would be the way to do it.
At the end, they really are the wet bandits.
Because they get